Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Founders Club Radio.
Welcome to the Founders Club, where each week we talk to the founders and leaders of great private companies. I'm your host, John Coffin, and this morning I'm joined in the studio by Jeremy Wing, the president and founder of Payscape Advisors, and Jim Biggs, the president of PH Harris Company. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hey, John. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Jeremy, we'll start with you. Tell us about Payscape and all the things that are going on there.
I hope a lot of things are going on there right now. But, okay. You know, when every time you leave, you just wonder sometimes. So we are in the payment processing business. Started the business 10 years ago, kind of as your standard merchant acquirer. We do a lot. We've got basically an authorization and a settlement platform to facilitate payment processing. With that, over the years, we've done a lot of cool things. We've become a very innovative company, and as the industry's evolved, we've evolved, and vice versa. So we at this point in time, we've got 12 offices, primarily around the Southeast. We've got some of our own, what I call last mile technology, so SaaS-based platforms that become solutions, always facilitating a payment of some sort. And then we also have about 250 employees, and we're growing like crazy, and we're challenging ourselves and to come up with new innovative ways to really provide a transaction, and we're doing some cool things.
So how did you get started in the payments business?
Yeah, so you don't go to school for this industry necessarily. Right, you stumble into it. It's cottagey, but it's huge, and it's growing. And Atlanta happens to be kind of ground zero for the payment processing industry. So there's kind of varying stats as to how many transactions flow through Georgia-based companies, but it's around 80% of the world's transactions.
80% of the world's electronic transactions go through Atlanta.
Through Georgia. We've got TSYS in Columbus. So okay. Our friends down south there, they produce quite a bit.
Okay. That's just a staggering number. So you're just trying to get your piece of that pie.
Our little we're a little thorn in the side of a lot of these big companies around. But actually, so our niche, or we started our niche, was really becoming a sales and marketing engine. So the vast majority of our employees still are sales folks, and we've over the years innovated, and like I said, we've evolved, and we've acquired some technology, we've built some of our own technology, but over the years we've really become really it's when we say payments, it's a very broad term. In fintech, even broader, you can put a lot of things in the fintech bucket.
Right.
But we've now become really an e-commerce facilitator. So over the years, we've gotten into, we build people's websites, we design them, we facilitate the e-commerce portion of them with buy me buttons, shopping carts, all of those types of things. We facilitate small business loans. We do things that, revolving around sports camps and their online registrations. We do things with online invoicing. We do things. So all of those things, I call them the Trojan horses to facilitate a payment processing transaction.
Okay.
But really, they're solutions. And it's the business as a whole, as any business matures, becomes a bit commoditized, and ours was one of those becoming very commoditized. And so we ended up getting into new markets that were emerging, and we also got into those solution-based technologies.
So you mentioned that some of the things you've just developed internally, but you've also made some acquisitions. Talk yep. about the both sides of that equation as you mm-hmm. grow, the success of your internally generated ideas and how those flourish, as well as some acquisitions.
Well, sometimes it's easier to buy it than build it. So that was our theory on these, and these were little niches that we enjoyed, and we've got an integration group. So we integrate into these SaaS-based platforms, and these, just the two that we acquired, happen to be partners that we integrated with. We see this a lot, like great technology, but with really they haven't really identified a great way to get to market. So your technology founders, in a lot of cases, aren't the best salespeople.
Okay.
So we leveraged our sales force, and we acquired these two. And they were both of them. One of them came with a team. So there's a bit of a talent acquisition there as well. The other one was really just technology that we acquired. We've over the years looked at a lot of deals, and a lot of times when you look under the hood, it's a little not quite as clean as we'd like. But going forward, we will grow through acquisition. We've identified a lot of targets, and we continue to as we get bigger, it's harder to grow so organically, so we'll have to grow through acquisitions, and we'd like to get ourselves into five or six different real what I call broad and deep verticals, that maybe a faith-based vertical, maybe a something that's real estate oriented, rent payments, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of solutions that we can kind of control the entire ecosystem, so the payment processing, the gateway, the sales force, the last mile, that is the solution for the client.
So it's interesting, I guess, both in your invoicing business as well as your registration business. This is something that's it's a process that's had to happen for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It's just you're really focusing very specifically on it and figuring out how you can streamline it, it sounds like, and streamline it effectively using e-commerce. Is that so as you think about verticals, is that kind of the core thing where you can effectively be a transformative player in it?
Yeah, definitely. You're solving problems with technology. Mm-hmm. So the days of when we were in school with the permission slips and you'd fill it out, and you staple your check to it, you know, and we've automated that whole process with our online registration system. So it's a vertical that, well, like I said, sports camp is like a niche within a niche within a niche, mm-hmm. but it's huge. There's thousands and thousands of them. So we process transactions for University of Georgia's camps, to University of Alabama, to Cornell, to private schools in California, to Lovett here in town, to everything, you know, across the board. We've gotten that, and that gives us an opportunity to kind of get a first point of contact and relationship with that school. And now at this point, we do all kinds of different transactions within the universities, be it tuition, be it bookstores, things like that. So it's really given us a differentiator.
You mentioned the importance of having a very strong sales organization. I noted that you now have clients in all 50 states and you're just, you know, growing pretty aggressively. How have you built out that sales organization to really effectively work with this great technology solutions that
yep.
you have.
Yeah. You know, that's probably where I spend more and more of my time building, you know, corporate culture and scaling the sales force that we have. But it's because, you know, I think as a founder, we back in the day, everything that I did, we documented it, we figured it out, me and my business partners, and we would go through and we would try to refine it and evolve it and innovate it. So as we've done that, we've been able to figure out ways to scale that and replicate a lot of our processes and procedures. And each office has its own flavor. You know, we've got great local market managers, and those guys have the ability to really kind of add their own, you know, for all intents and purposes. In Chattanooga, we're opening an office there, mm-hmm. and that Chattanooga office, it'll hopefully have a flavor of that manager. You know, it's and for all intents and purposes, we want people locally to think that Payscape is based out of Chattanooga,
right?
And that's really a differentiator also. So that localness, the bricks and mortar hub and spoke. So we've got I don't like processes as an entrepreneur. They're really frustrating. We try to limit the processes, but we also kind of give you the roadmap. And if you're getting really outside the box too far, we'll have, you know, we'll get you, try to get you back in. But mm-hmm. the same point, like that's how we've scaled the business. And we've got a great team. We spend a ton of time on corporate culture. We just got recognized as one of the AJC top places to work. So that really, you know, that means a lot to me out of a lot of the recognition that we've gotten over the years.
Why do you think you got that? I mean, what is it about your culture that you really are proud of, or that your employees seem to gravitate towards?
You know, it's one of those, we've bring all of yourself to work. It does. You know, we don't judge, and if we do judge, it's kind of in a funny good way.
Uh-huh.
But it's because of the big kind of. Ultimately, it's a work hard, play hard environment. And so all the things we do to push and pull the process, and they are strategic. You know, they're things that we do, our incentives, our beach trips, our quarterly, whatever it might be. Those things are all done methodically. And but ultimately, they push and pull the sales process, and they create a cool place for people to work and have fun and bring their dogs and do all the things that you bring 100% of yourself to work. And it includes baggage. People have baggage, but we don't mind that. And we like people that are maybe even a little rough around the edges, but we can make, you know, somebody, you know, it's the whole good to great type of thing that we're trying to do.
That's really great. You know, it's one of the things that seems to be such a challenge these days is finding great talent. Mm-hmm. Where are you finding some of your best partners in the business?
40%. So we're perma hire as far as, you know, our sales team. So we're always looking for new people. As we get into the specialty hires, it's becoming a little, you know, that takes a little bit more time and focus. But when it comes to sales and marketing folks, we have the ability to really identify, you know, we are doing things to refine the process also. I keep using that word, and I'm going to have to get better about not. But we've
I know that's sometimes hard for an entrepreneur, but you've got it. There are some processes that you have to grow into.
You have to. As a 10-year-old business, you have to get you have to add these metrics and things to take the business to the next level, to go another 20 years, double, triple size of our business. We are doing personality tests. We're trying to make sure that we're getting the right people in the right seats. 40% of our hires though come from internal referrals. So I think that when you produce that great place to work in an environment that people enjoy, you're going to get people to, we've got brothers that work there together. My brother works there. We've got all kinds of different relationships like that. Friends in other cities, we promote out from within. We build benches of talent, all those things. We have a full-time trainer that is training people on, we'll get really specific into where they need help or where they want help, and we'll get better about providing those resources for them.
Fantastic. That's you mentioned Atlanta and the local kind of press you've gotten. Talk about just this fintech revolution that's going on in Atlanta, and how does that help you grow your business being in, you know, effectively the Silicon Valley of financial technology development?
Yeah, it helps and it hurts. You know, there's definitely certain your talent. This is, again, corporate culture. Produce a great place to work or you're going to lose talent. So we can attract talent with it, but we can lose talent with it if we're not careful as well. So there's a lot of resources here. We're driven by other entrepreneurs locally. So other people that are doing things in the technology village here, you know, we integrate with a lot of those and partner with a lot of those types of products. We've got a lot of good friends that help balance things off each other. In fact, we're in the process of hiring a new CTO and just me making a couple phone calls to a couple guys, hey, will you spend 15 minutes with this guy? That helps me. And that have these guys have great opinions, track records, and they're technology guys. Those things help tremendously. So having those resources, access to capital, you're seeing I get phone calls every day from somebody from Boston or from Silicon Valley traveling through here.
Right.
So those types of things really, really help. So it's a great environment. It's fun. It's fast paced. And the fintech world, and I don't know where that we debate on when that word was actually even established, but it's mainstream now.
Right. Yeah, it has gone from something that people pay attention to for sure.
Wasn't it back end like bank process at one point? I think there was it was deep within the systems, but
that's
now
right.
It's come out.
Well, and I think part of it's been that it went from mainframe, you know, bank controlled type of scenarios to outsourced solutions even for a lot of financial companies, and it's just grown from there.
So, right.
Thanks, that's a great snapshot of your business and appreciate that. I'm going to switch to you, Jim. Tell us about Harris and how you got involved with this great brand.
Much different than the technology business, we're in the consumer product business. So we manufacture and sell products to people like Publix and Walmart and Home Depot and Ace Hardware. But we were in this business for about 25 years and built up a company to close to $50 million, sold that business at the end of 1997, and thought we'd go off and do other things. And really kind of got bored with the retirement type scenario, and a lot of our sales people.
How long did it take you to get bored?
About 2 years. And in addition, my wife telling me, you need a job, you need to go do something. So a lot of my sales force and sales team wanted to get back into consumer products, and specifically pest control type products is what we had sold before. So we tracked down a little somewhat unknown brand called Harris Famous Roach Tablets, and it's the oldest pest brand in America. It's been around since 1922.
Wow.
And it was privately held by a family, and so we
that was your birthday. I wasn't sure why that was on your shirt.
Yeah, we contacted the family that owned the brand, and they decided it was time to sell, and so we went down, talked to them one day, and purchased that brand from them. And it's a brand that's been in Publix for 49 years continuously, and it's been in many hardware stores nationwide. But it had started to become somewhat stale because they were not marketing and advertising and producing any products. So we bought that one brand with the idea, and P.F. Harris is a gentleman in 1922. He actually developed that roach tablet to use in the White House to get the roaches out of the White House. So we have a lot of articles and letters and, testimonials about how effective it is. Mm. And it's simply flour, sugar, and boric acid mixed with lures, And it's like baking a cake, and we press out these little tablets. And, you know, people are looking for organic-type formulas. Well, this is one of the oldest organic formulas out there. And after we bought the brand, we went out and started calling on hardware stores. And many of the stores would say, what do you want to know about the product? And we're like, what do you mean? He said, you know, I've been selling the product for 60 years, so I can tell you all about it. So we learned a lot from our retailers, and now we've expanded the brand. We're in about 30,000 retailers nationwide.
Wow.
Almost all the hardware stores, grocery stores, and like I said, Publix, Walmart, now Home Depot, and we just ship to Lowe's. So we're in a lot of places. And one thing we learned when we started selling the product, I went to New England and I was presenting the little Harris roach tablets. And most people in New England said, you know, we've got some roaches here, but not like you have in the South. And their next question was, what do you have for bed bugs? And we're like, what do you mean? And he said, well, the bed bug infestation has become monumental. And it was about the time that on media, you were starting to hear where they closed down Nike Town and closed down a lot of retailers because of bed bug infestations. And now that has become the number one insect nationwide. And every state has a bed bug problem. And so we went back and started developing a line of bed bug products. And those have just been phenomenal for building the Harris brand. So currently we have about 60 products from that one little box of Harris roach tablets.
So when you first started, it was really just the roach product. That's development of 59 other products just from your base.
Yes. And since we were in this business before, and all the people that are in the business with us, I've worked with them for over 35 years. So it's like we put the whole team back together. And they're very knowledgeable, and I appreciate what Jeremy was saying. We're constantly looking for good salespeople. And our attitude is, if we can find a good person that knows, you know, how to go out and just make calls, we can train them in selling our product. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that we have, like I say, I've worked with for many years. So we tend to hire people, explain what the job is, and then leave them alone. And they're very motivated to go out and work hard and call on the retailers. So that's how we built the company.
Jim, talk about that process of having a brand that's a very solid but that's underdeveloped, and how did you go about energizing the brand? Obviously, one element of it was the product development and broadening your scope, but how do you kind of reestablish a brand?
Much of what we do is guerrilla marketing and just going out and calling on individual hardware stores, and we'll call on the stores, and the majority of stores in the first year or so would look at the brand and say, you know, I used to sell that brand, but it just kind of disappeared. I thought it was out of business. And our comment was like, it almost was out of business. And everybody really appreciated the fact, even before I bought the company right here in Atlanta, I went over to an Ace Hardware on Roswell Road, and they've carried Harris for probably 60 years. And before I purchased the company, I asked them, you know, what do you think about this product that's on the shelf? Oh, that's a product we always have to have. If we ever run out of it, people come in, where's the Harris? And they're all excited about, you know, getting it back in. So it's really going out and calling on the dealers and letting them know, hey, the brand's still around. We've energized it. We're doing advertising. We're expanding the brand. And now you walk in a store and Harris comes in a yellow box, and all of our products are bright yellow. So you can recognize a Harris product just by the color of the packaging, and it draws people in with that. And we try and be innovative. You know, if we're in a hardware store and they recommend, you know, a bed bug product or some other product that we should be into, we go back and start working on that. Our attitude is always give the customer what they're asking for, and it makes our business grow, and it makes our life a lot easier. We're not trying to dream up totally new concepts. It's just, let's do the work and get it back to them.
Now, yellow is really the brand look and feel. Is that what it has always been? Was that a change?
The first box was actually kind of a off-color yellow. But we've brightened it up over the years. But actually, after we bought the brand, we got a call from a construction guy in New York. And he said, I understand you guys purchased Harris Rose Tablets. And we're like, yeah. He said, would you like a box from 1923? And so initially he started out and he wanted $500 for a box. I'm like, we don't want the box that much. So he said, well, I'll go and see if I can sell it to the Smithsonian or something because it's so old. And a year later, he gave us a call and he said, would you give $100 for that box? And we said, sure. So he sent us four boxes and we asked him where he found it. And he was doing work on a building on Ellis Island. And he looked over on the shelf and there were four boxes of Harris Roach tablets. So he thought, I better not throw that away. That looks like an antique. So he saved it and then shipped it down. We have it in a plastic sealed bag in our office now. Huh. So when we make really important accounts, we take that in to let them know that we've got a lot of history. It's still got the original tablets in the box, and they probably would still work.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot of history to the brand, and that's why we're excited about it.
Now, this trend that you mentioned of all natural that you've really extended into some of your products is obviously critical from a consumer standpoint. One of my favorites is Swamp Gator. Talk about the success of that and how you guys have launched that new brand.
Absolutely. And that's a brand that a lot of people, they don't relate, even though it's in a yellow package, they don't relate Swamp Gator always to Harris. But we were in hardware stores, and a lot of the stores would say, you know, we have young mothers that come in, and they're afraid to spray certain products on their child to keep insects away, and because some products have pesticides in them. And he said, if you had an all-natural, you know, natural plant oils or something that would repel mosquitoes and gnats and flies, you know, we think that would be a great product. So we came up with the formula, and it is all natural plant oils like lemongrass and geranium oil and peppermint, and developed it, went through all the testing for it, and then we wanted a unique name, and we were thinking, where do you get the most insects? And probably in the middle of a swamp. And so we decided to call it Swamp Gator, and it's been such a unique brand that people can remember the name. And we even had a lady who runs the guest shop at the Okefenokee Swamp that somehow she bought the product and then called and said, you wouldn't believe how many people come down and walk the trails through the swamp and get eaten alive by yellow flies or mosquitoes or gnats. And so we sent her down some products to test. And now every spring she'll buy 10 or 15 cases of Swamp Gator. And even the police officers, when they're working in South Georgia below the gnat line, which is kind of below Macon, they have to get out of the cars and, you know, they get inundated with gnats. And so they'll carry Swamp Gator. And so it's been a fun product to sell. And now we're expanding that line to a Swamp Gator that you spray out in the backyard to get rid of mosquitoes before a picnic or something in the backyard. So we're always trying to come up with unique brands and look for other brands, excuse me, that we might be able to acquire and run through our marketing team, because we have salespeople nationwide calling on hardware stores and corporate accounts like Ace Hardware and Tractor Supply Store. So we're having a lot of fun with that.
That's great. You mentioned kind of, you know, getting the consumer to make that choice. And how do you, advertising, marketing, what's working for you? You know, it sounds like you have this ground attack going with your key big box retailers, but what's going on the advertising side?
The real key is the on-shelf packaging, the look of the product so that it's attractive. It's got a key element. If you walk in a store looking for a bed bug killer, that's what you want on the label. You want it very large and prominent. This kills bed bugs, or this kills roaches, or out west we sell a scorpion product and it's got a big scorpion on the front. So that helps at the point of sale. But in addition to that, we do videos for our websites. We do a lot of television advertising in key markets. We'll be in some of the key markets for bed bugs starting in May and running television ads. And at the end of the ad, it's, they always say available at your local hardware store. And that drives people into the store to ask about it. But a real key is having the people in the store trained as to how your products are different than other products that might be on the shelf. And we'll go in and give samples and let them take them home and use them and make sure that they believe in the products before they make a recommendation. And that's really what helps. You know?
That's really interesting how, to me, how innovation is just, you're kind of listening, gauging the market, and then really kind of taking that and commercializing different products.
Yeah, to me, it reminds me of a reality show that's on TV now, and that's Shark Tank. You know, people come up with ideas, but they don't know how to market them. So it's our goal to take those ideas from, recommendations in the stores and then try and find out how to make a product and give it back to them. One of the largest product lines that we have right now just came from us walking through a manufacturer, and he handed us some little insect glue traps. And we thought, you know, there's a lot of these on the market, so we didn't really believe him. He said, take them home and use them. So we took them home, put them under the bed and in the closets. And in about 2 weeks, they were completely covered with spiders. And we're like, why are these different? And the key is they have a different lure that's never been put on the market before. Hmm. And so we decided to put them out under the Harris brand, and they're all natural. They have no pesticides in them, but they can smell that lure. And people take it home, put them under the bed, catch bed bugs, roaches, mosquitoes, crickets, scorpions. And that opened up a whole new category for us. And it's back to that being able to get rid of pests in your home without having to go and spray a lot of strong pesticides. And so people are looking for an organic solution to mm-hmm. pest control. And unfortunately, in the past, some of them were not effective. But now these really are, and they're going well.
Jeremy, you talked a little bit about innovation, but talk a little bit more about how you're kind of really driving that through your organization. It seems like you've got a lot of market data that's coming into you, and then you also have a lot of knowledge about different verticals that you might want to get into. But how do you make it all work?
It's funny how similar, you know, you take a product like Jim's talking about, and you know, you've got that as a, it's 1922, right? and the payment processing industry did not exist, but yet we still are innovating through similar message or through similar manners. So we're doing things just like he said as well. Like, you know, we're looking for what our clients are telling us, the things that they need. The one of the things they need is frictionless payment. So how does Apple Pay get to market? So we're helping take a lot of the clunkiness that's happened out of payment. So that's something we heard from our clients. And we have to keep our kind of finger on the pulse of what our sales and our feet on the street are hearing. So we lead through innovation through that way. We lead innovation through challenging our folks through training. We lead through being involved in our industry, which is our big ETA. It's called Electronic Transaction Association, is our big industry lobbying group.
Right.
So we spend a bunch of time with them, and we hear about like what is coming down the pipe from a regulatory perspective, and we try to innovate around that. There's been a lot of, in the last 10 years that we've been in the business, more change than there has been in the last 50 years. So where there's confusion, there's opportunity, and there's a lot of that right now.
Jim, you mentioned bringing some of your key teammates back together. Jeremy, you're kind of out there really recruiting a lot of new folks. You both mentioned training and, you know, really kind of making that be a hallmark of your companies. That's not something we hear a lot about today. Talk about how that's been successful for you.
For us, really, it's anytime we bring on a new sales representative, we have them go and ride with our top salespeople. And if that's in California or New York or wherever, we actually fly them there and say, just get in the car and spend a week riding with them and see how they do it. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of things that are different, such as, you know, in-store promotions, or they'll go in on a Saturday and give away samples to consumers when they're coming in. And it just shows that you're tying in more to the consumer. And to Jeremy's point on technology, years ago, we would go into a hardware store and write an order, and that's the only record we had of what how they were purchasing our product. But now, fortunately, accounts like Walmart and Ace Hardware will give us what they call POS, point of sale data. So we know immediately how many of those units of that product sold in a store of our product. So it makes us more effective with the dealer to let them know what's going on. But and we get a lot selling to old line hardware stores that might have been in business 50 years. Our struggle, some of the invoicing that we do, we'll write an order and then go back and mail an invoice to that hardware store. And we're like, you know, I need
to talk
to
you. I think I have a solution for you.
Jeremy,
yeah,
absolutely. You got about three solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Talk about e-commerce. It sounds like there's a lot of my wheels are turning.
Yeah, because it's so important. And in a hardware store, we try and say, well, give me your email. And we're like, oh, I don't want to give you my email. Well, we can email the invoice to you, and then you can just do the payment without waiting on the mail to go back and forth. So trying to bring them up to, you know, speed is a real key for us right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point. Training clients and training our sales reps, it's both are challenges. You know, you're herding cats to some degree.
Right.
So we've got, from day one, we do a training program. So this week, as a matter of fact, every month we do a week-long training program. We've got guys that kind of take you back into the history of the industry, but then also, because most of the people we hire, and this is another way that we innovate, is we don't hire people from within the industry. Okay. Every once in a while, we have a few, but really the fact we like those fresh thoughts, people coming in and thinking differently. So we come in and we give them a kind of a 101 training class, and a lot of the training class talks about just you know, not only technology and things that are going on in the industry, but it also talks about the psychology of sales and marketing and things like that. And it's funny, we do surveys afterwards, and they ebb and flow as far as we want more information on product, and we want more information on how to sell better. So we have continued modules that go on from there about how to sell product, how to do specifics in our invoicing system, how to do an online demo in 3 clicks versus 20 clicks, things like that. And we really we've refined it over the years. We've got a great guy that leads that team now. We call him the professor because he really gets into the analytics of what he's seeing and sees the patterns, and it's that's what's going to take our, it's one of the things that's going to take our business to the next level.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about how you both have grown your businesses so rapidly. What's the biggest challenge that you see to growth, and how do you think what are you going to do to overcome it?
I think it's get big but stay small. You know, so the challenge is to still, once you get over 200 some people in your organization, it's hard to know what their kids' names are and things like that. Right. But it is important to still have that family feel. So that's certainly one of our challenges. The evolution of technology now also is a challenge, but that's where I think there's opportunity. But I think keeping your finger on the pulse and really kind of making sure that you're not going after a distraction over here because there is this some new shiny object that everybody's into for the time being, but you know, remaining true to your goals and really, you know, where we want to, you know, not skate to where the puck is. We want to kind of be the puck, that whole theory.
Right.
So it's
there's a lot to learn from Wayne Gretzky after all those years, right? Yeah,
exactly. A lot of sports analogies.
And I think the challenge from our standpoint, being an old brand, a lot of the representatives that we have are in their late 60s, 70s. We even have a representative in Kentucky who's 89 years old, who still calls on 15 or 20 stores a day.
Wow.
And he says, I have 350,000 miles on my car, and what am I going to do, stay at home and watch television? No, I go out and call on people. But I brought my son in when he was in his mid-20s, and primarily to bring some new life into the business. And he quickly said, you know, a lot of our salespeople are pretty old. I said, well, hey, I'm getting older too, and that's your job, is to find new people to come into the industry. And a lot of times with all the technology, they're thinking about strictly going into technology companies and things like that. But an industry like this, where they could be a salesperson and go out and call on the hardware industry or Home Depot's or Walmart, they can earn a great living, have a great occupation, great job, and, you know, without having to necessarily be in a technology field.
Right.
So there is an industry, and it's just challenging to find the right person, bring them along. But a lot of times it's the sons or daughters of some of the salespeople, and they've grown up watching their parents, you know, in this industry, and they decide to get into it, and they make great employees for us. So that's the biggest challenge, you know, getting new talent, and we're always looking for that.
Why is it that schools, universities, don't do such a great job teaching sales?
I think they're starting to. How can we transform that? I think that they're really.
We've
researched that quite a bit, and there are certain schools that are doing better. There's a sales degree now from Kennesaw State. I think that I used to discount the fact that I thought I was a salesperson, just a sales guy, I would say, and. Really, there's something to be said about that because there's not a whole lot of people, like I'd said earlier in the conversation, you know, great ideas are great ideas, but they're nothing unless you can get them to market, and it takes salespeople to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I learned more at the university from visiting business people who are in sales or, you know, banking or whatever. I probably learned more from them. Just, you know, asking them about how did you get into this business? What, you know, what's your job like? And a lot of people, when I first got into this industry, were retired from companies like Procter & Gamble. So they were well-trained, very knowledgeable. And they love, if you ask them questions about how'd you get in, how'd you get started with this, they'll talk to you for days and you can learn a great deal from them. But I think colleges and universities would be, you know, better, like Kennesaw is doing, bring in salespeople and other people from this industry and maybe that'll direct people to start looking for that type of occupation that would be helpful.
It's interesting. I had the opportunity to talk to 50-plus Terry business students at the University of Georgia recently about banking generally, but I shared with them the best business advice that we had gotten from all the CEOs that we talked on. Just gave them a page to look at of just all the quotes. And that was one of the things that they were most interested in because it's just that wisdom and that common kind of view of this is what business is all about on the street or in the real world. And I think sometimes the more that we can kind of inject that into the learning environment, the better.
I think one thing that I, over the years, years ago, I heard Michael Bloomberg, and he said, the reason I'm successful is not because I have a higher IQ than other people or I'm smarter than anyone else. He said, I work harder. I get up early, I work every day, and I work long hours. And I think that's something that's driven me because otherwise you feel like, you know, I'm inferior. How could I possibly be as successful as someone else? And it's all about, you know, applying yourself and really be focused and just go out and work hard. You don't necessarily have to, you know, be a
straight-A student. I say work smart versus hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's a lot to that, you know, listening to other business people. I think this radio show is great because you can pick up other ideas from other entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of best business advice, Jeremy, what was the best business advice you ever got?
I've got so much. I've got a handful of mentors and people that I really respect that are not only in our industry, but you know, my father and my father-in-law, both great business people, spending a lot of time with them over the years. I think one of the things that I at least apply on a regular basis is that you can be disappointed, but don't ever be shocked when something happens. So we have mm-hmm. constant change, whether it's, you know, your key man that you think is like, you know, this guy is, you know, would fall on the sword for you, all of a sudden he resigns. Those things, just you have to be able to adapt quickly and you've got to be able to kind of move past that. So mm-hmm. That's one of those things that you get a little jaded, you know, with time with that type of thought process, but it's important. And self-awareness, I think being self-aware of where your limitations are and things that you have to outsource and you've got to be able to delegate to others. That's another reason that we've been able to grow the business is because you have to let go sometimes. As much as I'd love to be able to call on every one of our clients and spend, you know, hours with them, you can't do it if you want to grow the business.
Right, right. Jim, thoughts on best business advice?
I think just years ago recommending to me to listen to your customers and they'll tell you what they want and what they need. And if you give them what they want, it makes the selling job much simpler. And so we've really been focused on that. You know, just not only are you trying to sell your product, but you really need to listen to your customer and work with them on that. And also another was, you know, if you make that sales call that day and the person doesn't want to talk to you, maybe they're just having a bad day. And don't take it personally. Just come see them another time.
Right.
And if you have that attitude, I think you'll, you know, work out well in this type of sales career.
Really great advice. Thank you both. I'm going to move to what I call the speed round, where I just ask you some interesting questions for our listeners. Jeremy, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Yeah, oddly enough, I knew that was one of the questions. I wanted to be an architect for some reason.
Really?
I think that might go back to the building of things. I love framing things, and you know, whether it's building a piece of technology or a sales team or the company as a whole. I love building.
Okay. Fantastic, Jim.
I think I always wanted to be in sales. I mean, when I was 8 or 9 years old, I was selling greeting cards to my neighbors, and I thought, this is really easy. Go out and call on them, and if they buy, then you know you can win a new sleeping bag or selling Krispy Kreme donuts. But the best job I ever had was actually selling or delivering newspapers when I was about 11 or 12 years old. You learned a lot about business, and I think it's unfortunate that that's not available to young kids anymore growing up, because not only are you calling on customers, you had to collect the money back then and give great customer service and, you know, deliver the paper where they wanted it. So that really helped me a lot, you know, especially on Sunday when you're delivering that giant newspaper. But times change.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's remarkable. Some of those early job experiences really have a big impact on us.
We have a couple of those guys still in our sales force that are paper delivery guys. They still exist. Yeah. Few and far between.
Yeah. What about favorite charities that you're involved in or institutions that you guys are committed to?
I think it goes back to education as well. So I did Leadership Atlanta, I guess it was 2011, really recognized that the root of all of our issues as society come from education, early education. So we have a points program. It's called Payscape Pays It Forward, where employees get points for volunteering, primarily focused on volunteering in education-related charities. So we're big into Junior Achievement. We do a big annual golf tournament that raises money for them. Gong, it's called, Glow on the Green. So if anybody wants to join us, it's in June, end of June. Sponsorships available. We also have so that's one of the things. So we love education related things.
Okay. Thanks.
And from our perspective, we got involved years ago with humane societies around the country, partially because we made flea and tick type products and they needed those, so we would donate them to like the Atlanta Humane Society. Mm-hmm. My problem with that is I stopped having to go to the Humane Society because every time I did, I bring home another dog. So they're like, you can donate, but you can't come here. We worked with up in Cartersville in Bartow County. We worked with Humane Society there and helped them to fund that and do other types of charity work like that.
Great. How many dogs do you own now?
Currently down to two. At one time, it was six. So,
six. Wow. That's a pack. That's a pack.
That was a pack. And you walk six dogs, and people think, they would always ask me, are you a professional dog walker? I'm like, no, I'm an amateur, but, you know, I don't get paid for it. But working in that area is real rewarding for us.
Great. Jeremy, favorite golf course?
Oh, I'm such a hacker, but I do play a lot of neat courses. I think East Lake last week during Masters Week is pretty special.
Okay, that's great. One of the best courses in
a lot of history.
Yeah. Jim, favorite place for vacation or downtime?
Normally, like in the summer, we go up to New England, into Rhode Island. It's a small town. And when we first got there, they said, oh, the traffic's terrible up here in the summer. I'm like, you don't understand. I live in Atlanta, so, you know, that's bad traffic. But yeah. a lot of time up in New England.
Great. Do you sail up there?
We sail with friends, but it's better not to have a boat because all your friends have boats and they all need crew members. So they're always asking you to go out with them.
That's good business advice, too, for all of the listeners, mm-hmm. not to own the boat.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for joining us this morning. This has been a wealth of knowledge. Jeremy, how can people learn more about Payscape?
We'd love to have you guys visit us online. Our website's payscape.com, PAYSCAPE. Feel free to give me a call. I like to throw out my cell phone, 404-550-6620. I'll try to make sure my messages are not full.
Great. Thank you. Jim?
Just go to pfharris.com, and it's got videos on all the different products that we make and how to use those products. So that'll give you a lot of history about the company also.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both again. This has been a great pleasure. Join us again next week for another Founders Club broadcast sponsored by Atlantic Capital Bank and powered by Business Radio X.